Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, September 6th, 2011 Carrboro Board of Aldermen meeting. The first item on our agenda is a request from visitors and speakers from the floor regarding matters that are not on our printed agenda. I have two people signed up on matters that are not on the agenda. The first one is Ian Ingalls. Ian, if you would come up to the podium here and address the board. We normally ask folks who are not speaking to the board to try to limit their comments to 3 minutes. So if you would go right ahead.
I'm speaking on behalf of model hobbyists, mainly radio control, and the one site that I've seen that is good for medium-sized radio control hobby field is in Anderson Park. Mm-hmm. It's at the far end of the park. And right now there's a regulation that you cannot have radio control models in the park. I don't know why. There is no explanation in the rules, a little sub-thing, so I don't know why that was put in there. The radio controls, whether it be airplane, boat, car, doesn't make any difference. It's a lot safer than softball, baseball, football. I personally have not heard of any injuries from radio control get-togethers. That has been the strongest thing that I've heard so far, that people say, well, I think it's because it's dangerous. Sure, it's dangerous if you sell a fan and you sell it to somebody who sticks his finger in the fan. But those that do hobbies such as cars or planes, they're not intentionally going to be sticking their fingers in the part that's going to hurt them. It's biological nature. You don't want to do anything that hurts you, unless you want to be a professional wrestler. But so I'm trying to see if we can possibly get it at least changed for Anderson Park to allow radio control. It can be model airplanes, model cars, or any other radio control device that can be utilized in that space. What that would entail would be more revenue for Carrboro. Permits issued for food and drink vendors, and they could be specialized permits. Like one would be selling just hot dogs, another one hamburgers, another one would be selling Pepsi, another one Coke. But if other people in the park in other areas knew of these vendors up at the radio control area, they would come up there to buy a drink, and they're going to be paying taxes. Also, you can start getting the radio control stores that sell these kits to come out to the field, and they can have like a little fuel sale things there that the hobbyists can buy, such as fuel, covering, paint. Those people that bring their family members to it, then after everything is over and said and done, where do? They go into town. They utilize the restaurants, the clothing stores.
Okay.
So, to me, I can envision an additional extra income for Carrboro with no expense. You don't have to fork out for stands. The lights are already there.
Thank you. let me, if you wrap up right there, then you'll be still under 4 minutes. But let me recognize Alderman Lavelle.
Thanks for bringing this to our attention. I wasn't aware that we had a law or an ordinance or whatever that didn't allow radio-controlled devices at Anderson Park. And the reason I say this, and I'm sure it was probably an older one when it made sense and before the advent of technology we have now, our son a couple years ago got into having one of these airplanes, and we had to go to Cary like 4 or 5 times to go get it because it's one of the only hobby stores around that sells these. And place is a booming business, Annette. I mean, we could have a hobby store in Carrboro that could service these things because you have to keep going back for parts and classes. And they have a fly strip over in Cary where they all go out there on weekends and they fly their airplanes, and it's really good recreation. I'm not sure about the permitting. The concessions are another area. But in terms of looking at the ordinance and or considering whether or not there's a permit or not, I'd like to refer it to staff to have them look at it a little
I'll
more.
I'll second that. Yeah, that's a motion.
I think that's great.
It is. Okay. So that's moved and seconded. Jackie and then Randy.
I think the concessions are a separate issue from being allowed to fly it there. So we'll probably need to look at those separately. I mean, I think it's the difference between your being able to go out and fly your plane or your car and having a kind of like a fair. So I think those are kind of two different things. Would that be okay if we looked at them separately?
I don't look at it as being like a fair. I've been to a few radio control fields where I have seen them out there. A lot of spectators are out there just because they appreciate seeing a kit that somebody has built, and they think it's pretty and nice. It's not a fair.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Randy.
Ms. Dangles, I really appreciate you bringing this up because it is a big hobby, and I seem to remember, at McDougall School, the fields between McDougall and the end of McDougall's property were used for flying. Is that still being used, or...
I have no idea. The only thing I can tell you for sure is that the Carrboro Parks, and I'm trying just for the
Anderson.
On a trial basis for Anderson Park, but if it's a park regulation, no RC control, Anderson Park is out in the country, more or less. There's no apartments or anything. But I have not heard of any restriction preventing people from running model hobby in a apartment complex parking lot, which would be more people
concerned.
Wanting to set up a grievance there than out in the country like where Anderson Park is, which is just horse farms and horse barns, and that's it.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Ingalls. All those in favor of referring the question of RC control models to the staff, signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed.
That's our normal procedure when somebody brings a new idea to us.
So
that's what we normally do.
Yeah,
I'm a complete novice on this.
I thought maybe so. I didn't want you to think we're putting you off. That's just
how we
handle these issues.
Right. So what will happen next is the staff will take a look at this issue more closely and report back to the Board of Aldermen probably sometime later this fall. We'll get in touch with you to let you know about what date it's going to come back before us, so you can participate.
I would appreciate that. I did try to get hold of two hobby store owners. And one has just had surgery for a hernia, and he couldn't come. And the other one was just coming down with something, and I haven't heard back from him. But that one is down at Fuquay Verena, and the other one is in East Durham.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, may I make one more comment?
Sure, very briefly.
It is very brief, and it's kind of humorous. When I presented what I was talking to one of the policemen, I think it was a policeman, I told him about the the RC, and he said that people had complained about the noise, but he couldn't offer an explanation why they didn't complain about the city chainsaws and the city
lawnmowers.
And people with lawnmowers and riding mowers. And I said, and how about that airplane behind you? Did you see that or hear it? He turned around and looked and said, no, there's no airplane. I said, that's the point. If it was a glider, you wouldn't hear it.
All right.
Thank you. Thanks for coming this evening.
The other person who signed up to speak on a matter that's not on the agenda is Ricardo Palau.
Thanks for this opportunity to speak. I'm going to read straight through in the interest of time. My name is Ricardo Palau. I live at 103 Boyd Street in Carrboro with my wife and daughters. Our home is adjacent to the proposed parking deck at 300 East Main Street, the proposed by Main Street Properties. We have followed the presentation and subsequent approval process, and you may remember me from those meetings. I'd like the board to know what I've experienced this past week. Throughout years of dealing with Main Street Properties, we have maintained that we would sell them our property so we could execute the project without entangling or encumbering us. We do not want to be in their way. 3 years ago, we accepted their offer to purchase our properties. They opted not to purchase. Since this May, Main Street Properties has sought our signature for temporary construction easements related to the construction of Boyd Street. We have met with them a number of times. Our response has been for them to perform their project without us. If they found that not possible, we expected to enter negotiations with them for whatever they may need to perform their construction. From the permit conditions, we understood they might need easements of some kind. At each subsequent meeting, which we attended at their invitation, we expected clarity and a presentation of these issues to be negotiated. Main Street Properties presented us with documents for temporary construction easements. These documents were vague, not at all illuminating, and I have copies that I can share with you. The scope of what we will experience is not clear. The extent of the incursion is not clear, nor is their time frame. After reviewing these documents and meeting with Main Street Properties, we are unable to say whether there would be an open ditch in or near our yard. One version allowed a crane to swing over our entire property, including our house. They make no offer to compensate us, yet expect us to sign their documents. Our request for information and drawings have received slow reply, often with misinformation or outdated information. After weeks of review and research, I've discovered that their approved plan encroached my property and would require some permanent easement beyond the temporary easements they proposed. I confirmed this with the town on Friday, August 26th, in a meeting with Marty Roop and David Poitras. I brought this to the attention of Main Street Properties, and they disputed this. Though they designed the road, they had no idea it encroached our property. I was invited by Laura Van Zandt of Main Street Properties to meet with her, Marty Roop, David Poitras, and the town attorney on Wednesday, August 31st. In fact, there were approximately 8 staff members there, and Ms. Van Zandt had her legal representative, Kevin Benedict. It felt like an ambush, and it seems the following occurred. After examination of the approved drawings, the town agreed there was an encroachment and that a permanent easement should be sought. It was then proposed to allow Main Street Properties to shrink their road and move it slightly, thus avoiding the need for a permanent easement. Two issues troubled me here. One, the road is apparently being built to no standard, a term used by a town staff participant, as town standards have been relaxed to allow them to build this road in a right-of-way that is too small for the approved plan. And two, the town of Carrboro seems interested in allowing these changes, which seemed to run counter to the project's conditional use permit conditions number 1, number 2, number 6, number 9, and number 24. Can a group of unelected town employees change the ordinance in a meeting to accommodate a developer? If a road and sidewalk are going to be built there, I believe they should meet the town specifications and fully serve our properties, which are commercially zoned, as well as 300 East Main Street. The properties at 105 and 103 Boyd Street should be allowed to realize their full and utmost value. The construction of a no-standard road could negate our properties for future development, impose on them considerable cost to correct what the town may allow to accommodate a developer with whom the town has an agreement to use this parking deck. Thank you for your consideration. And I would also like to note with gratitude that the town staff has been openly accessible to me.
Wow.
Sorry.
It's all right.
Thank you.
Thanks. Do I need to entertain a question?
Perhaps so.
No, I'm going to ask him to provide a copy. I'm taking notes, but I may have missed some of the stuff, and so...
Sorry, people.
Oh, no, it's all right.
Yeah, sure. That's it?
No.
Oh.
No. You can go ahead, because I was going to make a motion.
I was going to say thank you for coming. I know it's not easy to, and I know you can feel like you're David fighting Goliath. We were not aware of this, and we take this, I think every member of this board takes this very, very seriously. So please do not feel that you are alone.
Thank you.
I don't know what the solution is, but now that we know that there's a problem, I think that this board takes that very seriously, and certainly don't expect you to have to make great sacrifices personally for a commercial project.
I was just going to say my suggestion was to refer it to staff. We want sort of all the details, all the parameters, what occurred at the meeting, whatever, and sort of give us what the options are.
As soon as possible.
Yeah.
I've spoken to somebody who has a small commercial property facing a similar situation, and the document that she ended up feeling was from the attorneys for the hotel, not really from the partnership, and that the document was requesting things that were kind of unreasonable, like promising never to sue if they do something wrong, you know? And she didn't, so I'm wondering if you're in communication with any of the other people who are being similarly affected.
I don't really think so. Just been dealing straight with the Main Street Properties people and straight with the town.
Okay.
That's it.
I've heard that same story from another business.
You might want to check in with some of the other, there are only two or three of them adjoining, but please don't feel like we're going to throw you to the wolves.
Well, I just wish I held it better together up here.
So. No, it's hard to do.
That's it. You did fine.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Pelleo, thank you so much. I remember you coming and I remember you talking about updating us, and I'm glad that you're doing this now. And it does take courage to, go beyond a staff meeting to say it still doesn't feel comfortable, and I want to come directly to the board. So I want you to know how much we appreciate it. I agree with everything Jackie said. Your coming forth is, it's news to us, and I think it's really important that you've exercised exactly what you need to do. So thank you.
And we will have copies of his statement, right?
Right.
And we'll have those.
Okay.
Soon.
Great.
So Joel made a motion. Sammy seconded it implicitly, explicitly. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity.
So here again, we'll hear a report back from the staff, and they'll get in touch with you about when that's coming back.
Yeah.
Okay. I have one other person signed up to speak on an item that is on our agenda, the Greenways Commission appointment. Could we there's, I guess, a procedural issue about the appointments to the Greenways Commission. So could we briefly jump to that that item, D2? I see there are a number of people in the audience who I think are stakeholders in the whole issue. Dan Coleman could not be here tonight and has requested that we postpone this decision until next week, if that would be acceptable to the board. We have a work session.
I thought we
the cancellation is the 20th.
Oh, okay.
Right. So is that acceptable to the board members? All right. So for those of you who are here on the Greenways Commission appointment, that's going to be actually next week rather than this week. Diane, I reckon if, particularly if you're not able to come next week, if you want to address the board now, you could.
Thank you for accommodating this too procedurally, since it's not since you're not going to vote on it today. Good to see everybody back. Well, I'm not a stranger to this meeting or to the Greenways Commission. It seems that we've been coming regularly and addressing this since 2009, which I think is a great thing, that there's been a lot of engagement and interest and learning about Greenways projects and what that could mean and means for our community. So, you know, we've seen that interest over the years, and a number of people who are here in the audience today or have been meeting about this and educating the community about the Greenways projects here. We've also seen a lot of improvement on the process and conversations and transparency on the Greenways Commission. We're really, you know, appreciative of that. And the protocols that have been put in place, because there weren't any in 2009 when we first came to this meeting in December of 2009. But we also believe that we need some new faces on the Greenway Commission. Going forward, that it's important to find new people who are willing to serve and who can facilitate the public dialogue and represent a range of views and concerns about the Greenways project and what it really means both economically and environmentally for Carrboro. That's a bigger conversation that should be informed by a wider group of people. And we also need women on the Greenways Commission. Sally Benedict is retiring, which I believe leaves one woman who is really the liaison from the Board of Aldermen. We know personally of two very qualified applicants who are interested in being a part of this. Mary Saunas, who I think is actually here tonight. She is an outstanding naturalist and nature photographer. If you've not seen her work, you've missed something, because not only is it beautifully done, but it's done in an investigative way. A recent piece she put up was of an osprey. Well, it wasn't on Bowling Creek, but I didn't even know we had osprey here. And she, if it's there, she will find it, and she'll share it and make it a part of the work that she does. So I think she would be a terrific addition. She has a monthly column now in the Carrboro Citizen, and that voice would be a part of the work she does. And she's very aware of the forest health, which is a big thing with Bowling Creek, is the forest that's there. It's not just the water, but it's the entire environment community, and she's very involved with that. Linda Heck, who was very instrumental in the Adams Tract purchase, is another articulate voice from the community. These are people who are invested in the community, who have property adjacent to that, who are, you know, not just concerned because they own the property, but they see it. They know what's happening, and they're there. So I'm obviously endorsing both of them. So thank you for hearing me, and next week when you make your decisions, I hope you'll keep these comments in mind. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Randy, you had a brief item you wanted to mention?
On this?
No, you had an announcement or something?
Okay. I was just going to come behind our celebration of
the mic.
Vickers.
Pull the mic.
I was going to just come behind our celebration of the Vickers decision. And let folks know in the community how much Stanley Vickers, Sheila Bynum, Florence, and Ted Stone appreciated the event. And I sent them copies of the Carrboro Citizen. They have been just delighted that we took the time and we showed in numbers our support and our interest in not only walking with history, but touching history. So thank you, board, and thank you, Carrboro.
It was a great event. And, Randy, I want to especially thank you for your role in helping make it happen. Good work.
I was just the right person at the right time.
All right. With that, I believe, is Arthur Bevan Ramsey here? Mr. Ramsey, if you would come stand in front of the town clerk here. Mr. Ramsey is joining the Economic Sustainability Commission. And
this is a charge of for the Economic Sustainability Commission members. As a member of the Economic Sustainability Commission, I will, one, evaluate commercial growth, development, and redevelopment to ensure projects correspond with the town's sustainability goals and the triple bottom line sustainability principles. Do no harm to the environment and protect natural resources. Adhere to the principles of social justice and equity in economic and community development efforts. Return strong stakeholder value. Two, promote the development and expansion of diverse job opportunities, providing for economic opportunity and mobility. Three, administer the revolving loan fund. Four, work closely with the town manager or his designee for dealing with sustainability issues. Five, make studies and recommend to the board plans, goals, and objectives related to growth, development, and redevelopment of the town. Six, recommend to the board site-specific plans for the commercial development of various lots within the town, showing recommended types of development for these specific lots. Seven, recommend to the board plans for the improvement of access to and circulation within the town by motorists, including parking, public transportation users, bicyclists, and pedestrians. Eight, upon request of the Board of Adjustment or Board of Aldermen, make recommendations to the respective board on requests for special or conditional use permits or land ordinance text for zoning map changes. Nine, perform any other duties assigned by the board.
You'll sign this. I'll take a copy and send an email to you so you can copy if that's okay. Thank you very much and welcome.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Are Rob Crook and or Ian Morse here? Rob, both of y'all come on up. Both are Ian and Rob are joining the Environmental Advisory Board.
Ian, Rob. I'll just read this once, okay? Charge of Environmental Advisory Board members. As a member of the Environmental Advisory Board, I will, one, advise the Board of Aldermen on policies, ordinances, and administrative procedures regarding environmental protection and the conservation of natural resources. The areas of review for the EAB include new development, solid waste, air quality, stormwater management, energy conservation, solar energy, groundwater, natural resources, and other areas. Two, suggest to developers ways to utilize energy-efficient design techniques such as daylighting, siding, solar exterior lights, and other solar energy techniques as they become economically viable. This input from the EAB is to come at the request of the Board of Aldermen or as part of a concept review procedure. Three, adopt a set of guiding principles or goals for the EAB and review these goals periodically to determine if they are being obtained. Four, take any other action authorized by the Board of Aldermen.
Four. I only have one pen. So. Matt's got a pen. Two pens. And I'll keep a copy and scan it and email it to you if that will work. Do you have a copy of it? That's great. Thank you and welcome aboard. Thanks for your service.
Hey, welcome. Thanks.
All right.
Hi, Rob.
Thank you.
That's great.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Okay. That brings us to the consent agenda, Mr. Manager.
Item number one is approval of minutes of previous meeting. Item number two is amendment to Chapter 11, Article 3, Section 11-19 of the Carborough Town Code to prohibit the placement of certain items within dumpsters or mobile household trash containers. Item number three is a minor modification to the Town Hall Cellular Tower Conditional Use Permit by AT&T. Item number four is a Home Investment Partnership Consortium Agreement Amendment. Item number five is a request to make a recommendation to Orange County for an appointment to the Carborough Northern Transition Area Advisory Committee. Item number six is a town code amendment related to certain left-turn movement restriction in bikeways. Item number seven is a request for approval of a supplemental agreement with NCDOT to continue Safe Routes to School encouragement and education activities.
Yes. But I've got a question before you vote on item number three.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Ask your question on number three, if you would.
Are we getting any additional funds for the addition of these three antennas on?
Good question.
No, the modification didn't rise to the level of a modification of their lease. Their lease allows for the modification and modernization of the equipment.
Maybe in the future, it's a little note, that maybe we need to look at what we define as modernization, because if they have the ability to say to the customer, we are covering more territory and thus could get more money, I think the town should get a little more money ourselves. I'll put it that way. And I don't know anything about that. It's just a question that should be asked when the next modernization. Because, you know, as technology goes forward, the little antennas get smaller, but they are around, you know, they expand, as I understand it, the ability for people to, and the coverage. So, you know, maybe we need to just think about that. Just for the next time. I'm going to vote for it, but just for the next time.
Thanks, Joel. Randy?
I had a question, comment on an item on the responses for questions regarding staff contacts in Hillsborough Road Library site. And I just want to direct folks to the Orange County Task Force reports and updates. And if you look on, it's on page 2 of that table.
Which item are you talking about?
Is this the consent agenda? I thought this was with the consent agenda.
No, I think it was just information.
That's a separate staff memo.
Okay, all right.
Let's come to that in just a moment.
Well, I do want to just add to the AT&T, and just a question that I asked before. I don't remember the last time you modified the antenna. Just wanted to make sure that there isn't any extra radiation, and that's all, like, you know.
No, there is a process in our land use ordinance where they have to certify they're not adding additional radiation.
Okay, so that's been covered. Thanks.
And then I just wanted to point out, I'm sure we'll have some other educational efforts to highlight this, but on the ordinance that will prohibit placement of certain items within dumpsters, so that people know, the certain items are basically computer equipment and televisions and other similar electronics are required to be recycled now that can't be disposed of at the landfill by state law. So this is the change we're making to conform with that. Electronics recycling is currently available as a free service at the Orange County landfill on Eubanks Road. So, all right.
I do have one strange question. Why no oyster sales?
Because there's a state law about that too, and in eastern North Carolina,
okay.
It's just like gets a little ridiculous.
Down okay, well, I understand.
Landfills filling up with oyster shells, kind of a waste of landfill space. Anyway,
actually, Squids recycles them.
Yeah, but everybody does now. You have to by state law. That's the point. But I mean, it doesn't seem like that big of an issue in Orange County, but in some other parts of North Carolina, it's a very big issue.
Huge.
Anyway. All right, so the consent agenda has been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Item D1, did you want to comment further on
well,
that?
Well, yeah, I just, but if it's, this is not the best time, I can hold and wait.
What if it's a change to some?
What is your question?
Okay, well. In the report, I just wanted to point out to folks that the task force, the Orange County Public Library Task Force report, on page 2 of the table, I wanted to have folks see that it says in number 4, the establishment of a Southwest regional branch library combining the collections, staff, and services presently located at McDougall School in Carborough Branch and the Century Center Library. So I wanted to keep in everyone's forefront that since Orange County is looking at other sites, that one of the things that we need to be thinking about and keep in the forefront of our of any reciting is what happens with the Cyberry and Cyberry services to downtown. And I'm just, so I wanted to point that out and not have that lost in the process.
Okay.
Duly noted.
That is a, that is an important point that I think has been overlooked up to this point. So, all right. With that, we're on item D1, report on local stormwater program. Mr. Manager?
This item is a report on local stormwater program required under new Jordan development stormwater rule. And Randy Dodd, our environmental planner, is going to give the presentation.
Good evening. Try to keep this brief. We want to give you a heads up about activity we're involved with at staff level and that we'll be bringing to you in sometime this winter or spring in terms of an ordinance revision and a program, new program for stormwater requirements associated with the Jordan Lake rules. This is a list of the rules. The ones in green are ones the town has already addressed through our town code and our land use ordinance. The ones in yellow are the ones that are most actively being looked at by staff at this point in time, and so they're really dealing with both new development and existing development. We gave you a report back in June that gave you a little sense of what we're facing with the existing development requirements. Tonight is about new development. And a related matter, the Jordan Lake rules include options for offsetting nutrient loads, and I'll just touch on that real briefly. Basically, the State Environmental Management Commission and Division of Water Quality is requiring all the jurisdictions in the Jordan watershed to develop local stormwater programs for new development. And they released back in the spring basically a model ordinance and a model program. And the draft that we have put together basically is just following the guidance they've put together. We will need to seek EMC approval, including ordinance provisions, and they're also just many of the things that they're asking for in their program documents submittal are also shown here, such as the contacts for program implementation, a stormwater map, and there are some things that they're asking. They're only asking one time. If we wanted to go back, we wouldn't have to get EMC or DWQ approval. So this is a one. Some of these things are just a one-time submittal. But if we did want to change our ordinance, of course, the EMC would be interested in that. And then there's also asking for some supplemental materials just to have help in the DWQ staff review of the program, which it's not real clear what the distinction between supporting materials and supplemental information is from a practical point of view, but from a format point of view, that's the way they've set up the submittal. The most important thing of these rules is that they're requiring that the runoff from new development meet performance standards for nitrogen and phosphorus, 2.2 pounds per acre for nitrogen and 0.82 pounds per acre per year for phosphorus. These are notable in that I'm pretty sure they're the most stringent requirements we have in North Carolina. I haven't kept up with every regulatory change that's happened in the other places where nutrients are regulated, but it is a significant requirement that was adopted as part of the rulemaking process a couple of years ago. As I mentioned, an offset option is available. It's spelled out in the rules and in our submittal. It basically allows a developer to treat to a level above these performance standards and then pay into a fund for off-site treatment. So that option is available. It's important to note that this is above and beyond what our ordinance currently requires for stormwater. Exactly how much above and beyond is going to be a very site-specific kind of determination. So we can't quantitatively speak to that, but qualitatively we can just say that for some developments, they're going to choose to use the offset provision more than likely. For some, it will mean that they may put in, use more of the site for stormwater treatment and perhaps put in management practices that are either larger or in series to meet the requirements. In our drafting of the local ordinance to comply with the state rules, we do believe we've gone above and beyond what's required, specifically by including a threshold that kicks in the rules of 5,000 square feet of impervious surface being introduced. In the state rules, the threshold is, depending on the type of development, either half an acre or an acre, and it's not specific to impervious surface, but it's triggered by disturbance. But we have made sure that we fully comply with the state requirements. This is just an additional thing we've included in the draft local ordinance. The plans and schedule, as I mentioned, the Division of Water Quality created their model ordinance and program this past spring. We're required to respond by the end of this week. And DWQ will be providing review comments back to staff later this fall and winter. And then we'll work with them to finalize a draft ordinance and program to bring to you all for review and for a public review as well. And then after that, presumably, assuming that process comes to completion, then we'll notify DWQ, adoption of our local ordinance, and the EMC will be reviewing all of the local submittals. It's currently targeted for May of 2012. So basically tonight we're just asking the board to adopt a resolution accepting the report we presented, and I'd be happy to address any questions you may have.
Lydia.
Yeah, Randy, just a quick question. Are the other municipalities that are affected by the Jordan Lake rules, are they following a similar timeline that we are with this? Like, yes. Exact timeline or roughly same timeline?
Everyone has the same timeline. So the state's going to be receiving, you know, in bulk a number of submittals in the next week.
Okay, thanks.
Are there any other questions from board members?
Interesting question. So if the board or successive boards of the town purchases property, say, to build a community center, they're going to have the same process with stormwater management, because it probably disturbed more than half acre, I'm sure.
I will look to Trish and Mike.
I'm not sure the approval process, it seems to me, and don't hold me to this, but it seems to me that for local government projects, the state must approve it. I believe that's correct. I think it would be the same standard.
Right.
It would just be a different approval body.
Okay. And looks like there was one person who wanted to speak on this item. Could you come up to the podium? Come around the front. It's all right.
Hi, my name is Betsy Kempter, and I'm here representing Finger Bowling Creek. We're really interested in promoting a healthy watershed, and we applaud Carbro's efforts to help clean our streams and clean up Jordan Lake, and also that you're moving forward with these rules, which have many really wonderful things about them. There's one concern that we've talked about, and that is that with this plan, there's no actual measurement of the nitrogen and phosphorus that's coming out of Carbro, and we would like to encourage the town to consider actually doing some monitoring to look at what nitrogen and phosphorus is coming out of our town. And the reason is twofold. One is because this whole plan is based on a model, and models are great, but they can have problems, and there's certainly a lot of variability across the state. And the second reason is cleaning up Jordan Lake is a really slow process. And, for example, the phosphorus that's in Jordan Lake, even if we stopped putting any phosphorus in there today, it's going to take a long time. And not only that, we don't know what will happen between Carbro and Jordan Lake that's going to increase the levels of phosphorus. So it would be really good for Carbro to know, first of all, the changes that we're implementing are making a difference, and we are dropping the levels. That would be really useful information. And then the other piece would be that we haven't seen the effect downstream yet, but we should keep doing this because we may see it soon. So thank you.
Go ahead, Tim.
So you're suggesting we should have a baseline measure before these rules are implemented so we can compare to before and after?
Right. So right now, the nitrogen and phosphorus measurements are coming from Jordan Lake, mm-hmm. and we would like to see some measurements coming from the water that's leaving Carrboro and going downstream mm-hmm. So that we can see if this right. program is working.
Yes. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
I have a question. My hands up first. My hands up first. I feel like Randy is going to answer my question potentially. Because I remember a discussion we had back when the Jordan Lake rules were first proposed, and we had sort of a back and forth about how do you know that it's Carrboro and not Chapel Hill with the amount of phosphorus or nitrogen or Durham and or Pittsburgh. And so I'd kind of like to ask those same questions again because I've turned 50 and I can't remember what the conclusion was during that conversation.
Okay. So in the process of developing the rules, there was technical studies that were completed, some completed and sponsored by Triangle J Council mm-hmm. of Local Governments. And there's also been monitoring efforts that have been set up and run, some with state funding, and USGS has also participated in some of the monitoring. So there are samples that are taken mm-hmm. and stream flow that's measured at several sites in the watershed that actually allows the people who are looking at this to not just have modeling information, but to also have some actual data on the amounts of nitrogen and phosphorus that are reaching the lake. Now, those efforts, and so the model that was developed is fairly crude in terms of its ability to distinguish between exactly where the nitrogen and phosphorus is coming from. But there was an effort to do that. It didn't at the end of the study, it wasn't designed to say this much is coming from each of these jurisdictions, but it was able to say this much is coming from these smaller watersheds throughout the study area. I think the short answer, the summary of all of that is there is a baseline of information. All of the local governments believe that we need better information to study the actual sources of and delivery of nitrogen and phosphorus from our individual jurisdictions. And so there's a scientific advisory board that's been set up and that has been meeting that is going to try to move forward a study process to get better information. So I don't know if that was helpful.
No, that is helpful because this is my next follow-up question. And if you know, and maybe you can have this for the next discussion that the board has, in terms of what is the technology and where is the science for determining where exactly the phosphorus and nitrogen come from? And if the science is not sophisticated enough, whatever studies that the board bases on, there has to be knowledge of this is about all it can give. Does everybody understand what I'm mm-hmm. saying? Mm-hmm. And so that at this point, while there's a baseline, it may not be the baseline that sufficiently informs the board and others of where exactly it's coming from. I mean, we all know the assumption is the more impervious surface you have, picks up the pollution, runs down into the watershed. We know that. But in terms of is it coming from Carrboro and Chapel Hill, which has had a sort of robust let's protect every watershed we can program, where other jurisdictions, for whatever reason, do not. And so, it goes back to the whole argument of why should we be penalized when other folk haven't done what they're supposed to do.
This is the other reason, it seems to me, that her point is interesting, yeah. As an interesting one. Yeah. Randy, did you have another question?
So what I wanted to know is if there is a group of folks who are going to be working on this and getting, you know, more data, are you planning to make systematic reports back to us on and have you started that process?
Yes, so I mentioned there's the Scientific Advisory Board, which is formed of local government representatives along with academics and people from the state that has been formed and has been meeting. There's also been a more informal work group that's been meeting out at Triangle J that includes local government folks. And we're all trying to get our heads together on making recommendations on how to get this better information. And so that's one thing that's happening. The state has sponsored, as part of this rulemaking process, the development of, they call it an accounting tool, and there's just a very little bit of information in the staff report about that. But it's basically I've reviewed it, as have other local government staff. It's basically a big improvement from what they've done in the Neuse River Basin, the Tarr-Pamlico Basin, as in terms of providing a tool to look at site-level delivery of nitrogen and phosphorus for different types of development scenarios. It's more robust, and it's got more science behind it and better data, and so that's an improvement that the state has made. You know, exactly what this is going to look like as this whole process moves forward, it we'll have to see. But it will. These kind of studies are pretty involved, and one of the big questions is how to create a partnership of all of us working together to fund it and to get the best information possible. So that conversation is started, but it's certainly not reached any kind of place where I can bring back to you all options or alternatives to consider. I did want to mention also that the town has collected water quality data historically in collaboration with Chapel Hill that has included nitrogen and phosphorus monitoring. That both town staffs have worked together to press pause on that program because we weren't sure it was getting us the best information. So we're sort of in a time period of looking at the design of that monitoring network to get better information. And so absolutely, you know, the intention is to continue to seek ways to cost effectively get the best information that we can.
How's the timing with the implementation of these rules and being able to set up a process for determining a baseline?
Well, there have been a baseline does exist that's aggregated across jurisdictions, and there's some information from the water quality monitoring that has been done in Chapel Hill and Carrboro historically, that's been done over 7 or 8 years. The thing that has been missing from that is basically water samples have been taken and then taken to a lab, and the lab has done the analysis on it. But what we haven't had is that, to couple with that, information about the stream flow coming off of our different creeks. And to get the total mass of the nitrogen and phosphorus, you need to have both pieces. So that's something we're looking at. I think the short answer is the rules have built into them a baseline time period that is already passed. The baseline time period, I think, is 2004. I don't see that, you know, there's any critical time horizon that we're missing if we don't act quickly. But obviously we want to get the best information as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. And the timeline for these rules, it's driven in the state regulations mm-hmm. that you know, that aren't flexible, and so the rulemaking process is.
Right. I guess it's a matter then of just setting up the process for the measuring the baseline for what portion is of car burrows, and I understand it's a hard thing to set up. So,
Randy, if you can break down the watersheds, is there a way to, you know, over time to look at the micro parts of the watershed?
It's probably cost prohibitive to do a lot of monitoring at a fine resolution like that, but there certainly can be modeling that's done that's then calibrated to data that's collected. My thinking about it to date has been that we probably need at a minimum some monitoring for Bowling Creek, at least one station, and one for Morgan Creek as the two major watersheds that we have in Carborough. But whether we'd be able to afford going beyond that, you know, we just have to mm-hmm. have to look at some options.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask this question, or maybe you don't have the answer to that, but what effect does a drought have on the ability to determine how much nitrogen and phosphorus are in the stream flow? Because, you know, it has been abnormally dry for the last, let's say, 3 to 5 years. And so I guess my other question, not that I'm against monitoring, because I am for monitoring, in fact. It's just that these are the kind of questions my son has to do a science project for 7th grade, so I'm kind of thinking, what can he do? starting to think. In terms of what effect does that have? Because I went down to the creek that abuts my neighborhood, Spring Valley, and it was completely dry, just completely dusty bone dry. We could walk in the creek. That was the thing we did. We walked in the creek, actually. So, I mean, what difference does that make when, for example, there's really no movement until probably today of any stream flow?
Yeah.
So that's just a question. If you have the answer, if you don't.
Yeah, so, I mean, just in broad terms, most of the nutrients are delivered downstream to the lake during runoff events, during storm events, during rain events, and so when you from stormwater speaking specifically, what looking more holistically at the lake, what happens is that you've got a constant source that's in the wastewater that is pretty much at a level basis that's always going in, and so it's, you know, during the low flow periods, that wastewater, the nutrients coming out of the wastewater are still getting to the lake, and then you get these pulses during the flow events from the stormwater runoff.
It's interesting.
I don't want to belabor this too much, but I don't know whether this is whether someone is already looking at this or whether you all are thinking about this, but it seems to me the other thing that would be, you know, What's passing underneath Estes Drive extension and what's passing underneath Smithville Road amount to 95-98% of all of the water flowing out of town of Carborough, only sort of the Lloyd Street area and part of downtown over there doesn't flow under those two bridges. But it would also be interesting to know what's flowing into University Lake or out of University Lake, either way.
Mm-hmm.
Point being that an unknown amount, I guess, of phosphorus and nitrogen come from University Lake watershed, and for the most part, that's not our doing, since we have very little of our jurisdiction that very little development can be done within the town of Carborough that's in the University Lake watershed. So that seems like the other point that would be particularly. Mm-hmm. Helpful to know about. So help me understand. You're saying we have done monitoring in the past. We're not sure how useful the method of data collection was in the past, and so we're not doing it right at this moment.
We've been for about a year. Chapel Hill actually pulled the plug. We were paying a little bit of money to Chapel Hill, and they were actually implementing the program. They were going out in the field and taking the samples and taking them to the lab. And Chapel Hill pulled the plug on their program because they didn't. This was a little over a year ago, maybe getting close to 2 years ago, because they didn't have confidence that they were, that the amount of money that was being spent to do this monitoring was getting the return on the information that was being delivered from. So they wanted to step back and redesign the program and work with us as well to hopefully continue a collaboration. And I expect that in the near future, that program will be reinstituted and it'll look a little bit different. There'll be different types of things that are done at the labs when the samples are taken in. And, you know, one of the things that we've been talking about is actually starting to measure stream flow in addition to just running these samples at the lab. When you take them to the lab, you get basically a concentration, and that's helpful information, but it doesn't tell you how much is actually, you know, it just tells you what the value
polluted,
is in
how
water
polluted level. That water is, as right. opposed to how much pollution total is going to
the stream. Right. Like, right. So the stream flow is sort right. of the missing link, and
you need that stream flow information.
And so that's we're looking at.
Go ahead.
I want to just go back to something you said and be real clear. So if the wastewater, if the nutrients in the wastewater are included, is that correct in the totals?
What gets the lake and what's regulated? Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So do they separate out somewhere the stormwater numbers from the waste?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so the wastewater numbers, really, with increased density and development, that's only going to increase. They must have some modeling to project.
There are requirements for the wastewater to be reduced simultaneously with runoff, with the amounts that's in runoff from
okay.
both urban land and agricultural land. So while the amount of flow is going up at the wastewater plants as more connections are made. Although, you know, there's also water conservation that's helping to mm-hmm. reduce the amount of flow. But, you know, as more connections are made, they're having to take more nitrogen and phosphorus out at their wastewater plant than what has been required. So in net effect, they will be reducing the total amount of nitrogen and phosphorus.
They will, on the wastewater.
That gets to the lake, yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Randy. Okay. You seemed like you had one more sentence to share. Can you stand up and belt it out from there? You seemed like you had one. Yeah.
I was just pointing out the difference in the monitoring. So right now we don't have any monitoring at all, but it's important that the monitoring that was happening before was a snapshot one day of the year, and what you need is a continuous monitoring program.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's okay. Actually monthly. There was the same thing as monthly.
Was monthly, once
monthly.
A month. Okay. Before.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Randy.
So I guess we'll move. Has anybody moved to accept the report?
Yeah.
We need that motion.
I thought it was moved and seconded.
No.
Okay. We can do it again.
Right. Joel moved it.
Joel, I'll second.
All right. All those in favor, signify.
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Okay, that brings us to the end of the printed agenda. Jackie, you had one item?
Yes, I did, because we haven't talked about it in a while. Towing. Towing has increased around Carmel Mall and downtown a lot in the past several weeks. And I'm not going to argue with Carmel's regulations. They are their regulations. However, I've had several people tell me that they had vehicles towed, they went to get them, and they were not allowed to use anything but cash, that credit cards and debit cards were not accepted. One of these people lives out of town, so had to leave the car there for a couple days and ended up with like a close to $300 bill because they couldn't get back to get their car. I don't think that this is a mistake or a happy coincidence. I thought that there were regulations about about credit cards, having to accept credit or debit cards. Did Chapel Hill, in changing their regulations, just implement that? It seems awfully predatory if at 2 o'clock at night you just might not have $150 in your pocket. But you probably have your debit card. The good chief know anything about this?
You're sparking a mini conference over there.
In response to your first point, at the request of Alderman Coleman, staff has been discussing the towing issue with Car Mill Management, and okay. Annette will be meeting with Nathan this week. And recently we did send out the response regarding our towing regulations about accepting methods of payment, and we do require that tow truck drivers accept all methods of payment.
So what would happen to somebody who was towed by Barnes and Barnes would not accept a credit or a debit card? What recourse do they have? So let me be clear on this, Matt. Our ordinance states that they have to accept these cards. And that's we've had in place for a couple years since we were dealing with the stuff down the street. So what recourse would these folks have?
Yeah, I think we have contracts with these folks, do we not?
We do.
So this was with Barnes, and they told these people straight out, no, we won't take your credit card, we won't take your debit card. And then they had to come back from Raleigh several days later when it was convenient for them to get their car and paid hundreds of dollars extra.
I don't think that particular provision is not one that has either a misdemeanor or a civil penalty associated with it. So I assume what we would do would be enforce it. I don't know. I don't have the contract at hand here, but I presume it provides it for some way of terminating contracts for towing. If that would be contracts with the town. I don't know. But these are maybe private folks.
Yeah, these are private folks. I mean, they were towed from, you know, they were wrong. They had parked overnight at Harris Teeter and then came back the next day and their car was gone. Later on, went out to wherever it is that Barnes is. They wouldn't take, you know, they would only take cash.
Well, I think what we need to do is amend this ordinance to provide some sort of civil penalty relief because right now we don't have it.
But Barnes was in violation of our ordinance. Is that correct?
Well, clearly the ordinance says it says that the says that the towing or storage firm must accept payment by a credit or debit card in addition to cash.
If I were them, I would consider the possibility of some type of small claims action against the towing company if they're in violation of the town. If the fee was charged in violation of the town ordinance, then I'm not saying that's a great solution to the problem, but at least in the immediate case, that would seem to be
an order. Some money
and that's independent. That's an ordinance, not contract-related. In other words, it applies to getting towed from private property?
Because I remember when we were all working on that.
And let me...
We'll have to check and see what remedies there may be in the contract, whether it's in essence in the nature of a franchise or whether I just don't remember off the top of my head whether.
Okay.
It's in.
Could somebody send me an email and let me know?
Sure. That is. We'll take that as a motion to refer this matter to the town staff. All those seconded. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. And I'd also appreciate if somebody could make a call to Barnes and tell them we're aware that they have done this.
I might, without belaboring the whole subject too much, I would like to, you don't have to address this now, but would like to raise the question. I know if you're, Hillsborough Plumbing, Inc., and you want to work on building a house in the town of Carrboro, you're required to have in order to be on the building permit for building a house, you have to have a privilege license in the town of Carrboro. And I would just like to raise the question of whether towing companies that are operating, that are based elsewhere but operating within the town of Carrboro, are required to have privilege licenses, and whether there's an opportunity there to use the privilege license to relate this to their qualifications to have a privilege license.
Great question.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted, Matt, you mentioned that Annette would be meeting with Weaver Street Management about the parking situation there, and I'm sure this has come up before, but I know I had a few folks talk to me about a concern that they parked in that lot and did business at Carmel Mall and then walked across the street to do something else and were in danger of being towed. Mm-hmm. And I think we've talked about this, but, I mean, that's ridiculous to want someone to drive across the street and repark just to go across the street.
It's gotten more aggressive.
It has, and in Chapel Hill also, but also we're hearing about in Carrboro, and maybe nothing we can do about it at all, but just something to mention that seems like bad policy.
Staff is looking into it.
Okay. Thanks. Anything else? Yes.
Could you have a WASA staff email me the rainfall, not necessarily the last 12 months, but the last 7 years, in the same format that they have on key indicators and performance measurements? I know they have it somewhere.
In other words, similar to what was in their recent
right.
report,
yeah.
the June report?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all.
And at the same time, we have this email
from Dan. Can we get a copy? He's requesting a copy from the WASA, because in the report they state that they have a 2012 deadline for submitting documentation for this issue.
For which issue?
The Jordan Lake
water
outtake issue and resolving the interlocal agreement. And so I guess we'd like to request that we, you know, get a copy from the WASA that shows this deadline. Is that...
That request was forwarded to OWASA today, and they said they would respond as soon as possible.
Okay.
Okay. That's great. Thank you very much. All right. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second. Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed.
I wonder what they call it.
Unanimously.